Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 11, The Dueling Club.
Oh, man, The Dueling Club.
The Dueling Club. This one, it had a very nice little actual treasure at the very end, as per this podcast.
Yes, it does.
I thought I was like, hey, that's the thing. But we'll get to it.
We're there. We've reached the thing. I know.
We've reached the thing. That was exciting. Also, before we dive on in, I just want to give you guys all a quick reminder that our this podcast, Through the Gryffindor, is going on tour. Our Through the Gryffindor.
The Through the Gryffindor. I know. I feel like every single time we have to say like Through the Gryffindor is going on Through the Gryffindor.
I know exactly. You know, you guys hear how clever we were with the name?
Yeah.
It rhymes.
I think 2020 tour was already taken by somebody else.
2020 tour.
I have a feeling a whole bunch of people were like, hey, it's 2024. You want to know what we should use? 2020 tour.
2020 tour.
Which yeah. I don't blame them. It's pretty clever.
It is good. That will be happening. It's kicking off in June. Tickets are on sale now. We are going to Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. And we really hope to see you there. You can see us do this show live in person.
I know. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It'd be cool to have everybody like sort of in with us. I'm very curious to see what it's like to do an episode with people in the present. It's like, it's kind of like you like say a sentence, you can like look up and like see everybody's faces and be like, what do you guys think?
What do you guys think? Was that funny?
Was that smarter? No.
I know.
Okay, we'll delete that. Thank you.
just imagine when we were like through the Gryffindor, they're all like, oh my God, hilarious. Yeah. What a great name.
You guys are so clever and smart.
You guys
and stuff.
Are so good. I know. Ben, I was also checking out our YouTube stats here. We're at 28,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Whoa!
So we're climbing up still, closer and closer.
A little bit of a surge. I know. This is very exciting. As ever, the goal is to hit 100K.
100K. I did also notice, I was looking at some other analytics, 30% of the people who watch on YouTube are not subscribed. So there's like plenty of opportunity, guys. Just click that button. Boom. We'll keep moving the needle right on up there.
Moving it right on up. Yeah. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for tuning in, week out.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, let's just dive into the actual chapter now. The Dueling Club, Chapter 11. I loved the chapter art. It's just like, I guess it's nearly Headless Nick floating above the ground. It is the most unusual interpretation of nearly Headless Nick like I've ever seen.
I agree. So it's actually quite a massive chapter.
It's a really big one.
Yeah. I was scrolling back. I was looking at like the Death Day party. Like when you compare it to like Mrs. Norris, like hanging from like the torch bracket, it's like, I mean, I would say it's easily four times the size. So quite the large one, not at all how I picture Nearly Headless Nick, but I can't tell if that's like,
he looks like a pirate.
He does. He kind of looks like a pirate and kind of like a manic pirate at that. But yeah, he's also got a sword.
He has a sword.
Does he normally have a sword?
He's
like Sir. Is he a sir?
He's sir, so he has been knighted.
He has been knighted, so it wouldn't be completely unusual for him to be carrying a sword. I do feel like the sword could be like a slight little like morsel of like foreshadowing that like dueling with wands, but dueling is also done with swords. Swords are going to be relevant to this plot at some point in time.
What is curious to me is that it almost suggests that when he was beheaded, he had the sword on him.
You're right. Or like when you're in like the limbo and you're getting ready to like choose how you'll go back as a ghost, do you get like all of your artifacts like all lined up and it's like, let's see, what shirt am I going to wear forever and ever and ever?
I feel like you'd just be stuck in whatever you were wearing.
No, I agree completely. I just think it's whimsical to think about like being in limbo and having like every object you've ever owned at your disposal to be like,
oh man,
why not?
I know. Boy, that would be interesting. Like if you woke up tomorrow and you're like, okay, so the outfit you pick out today, that's going to be what you wear forever. Yeah. So pick good. Boy, that'd be a lot of pressure.
It would be. It would be indeed. I know. Or maybe it's one of those things where it's like, well, I'm gonna wear it forever, so what's it matter either way?
Like, yeah, like people just get used to it.
Every 15 years it'll be in trend, then every other 15 years it'll be out of trend.
Right. Exactly.
That's how trend works.
Provided you were wearing something, well, I guess hopefully it all fits and stuff though.
Also true. You know? Yeah, yeah.
This was that day point. I just wore a baggy sweatshirt and now I just sort of always am.
Now I'm always wearing it. Yep. Yeah.
I'm wearing pajamas for life. Let's go.
Well, that wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of an interesting depiction, but yeah, the Dueling Club, kind of a fun one because we know in this chapter Harry's going to learn one of his most iconic spells.
Oh man,
basically hard stop.
There was a lot happening. I was like going through it. I was like highlighting so many things. So it wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being a longer episode. But you, the listener, will already know because you can see the length, and we're just talking now, and we don't know.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, what hit you first?
Well, out of the very first sentence, I liked the sentence blazing with winter sunlight, because I never think of winter sun as exactly blazing at all.
No, I agree completely. I was like, this is like almost an oxymoron of a sentence. Like,
yeah.
I'm curious, like, what we were going for with the word blazing.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it feels like nothing about
like,
winter is
like
ever
bright,
blazing.
I guess. As yeah. Well.
Bright, yeah. It doesn't seem bad. I feel like when we go skiing, I regularly get like sunburned because all the sun is reflecting off of the snow.
That's true.
So brightness is certainly a thing, but
it
yes.
It definitely is.
But blazing definitely has like a heat intensity to it, which does not seem to like it doesn't seem like a Scottish winter is known for its blazing temps.
For its blazing blazing winters up there. The next thing that stood out to me was just out at the bottom of the page, and I feel like Harry, I mean, this is sort of the theme of this book, but it seems like Harry is like a little more insecure in this chapter than at almost any other time. Like normally he's pretty like confident and courageous and stuff, but he's like, he goes to the dorm room to try and meet up with Hermione and Ron, and he's like, says, feeling slightly hurt, they weren't interested in whether his bones were back or not. And it's like, well, you don't know that's what's happening. Like, you know, maybe they didn't know you'd be down this morning, or maybe they just haven't gotten up. Maybe they're at breakfast. Like, you don't know.
I'll tell you
putting
what.
A lot of words in their mouths.
Right. Yeah. Well, my jaw hit the floor under the basis that Harry's able to grow back all of the bones in his arm in one night.
One night.
You know, it's like, that's like one of those things where like in my head, I'm like, he's definitely there longer, right?
Right.
You know, like it can't, one day.
It's interesting, like the limits you put on the magic. Like, I'll buy that he can grow them back. That's fine. One night?
What?
I don't know.
Right. Yeah. It seemed like the last anything we got, like after he like had taken like his Skele-Grow, it seemed like he was like feeling like splinters, you know, in his arm or something. So in my head, I'm like, man, it seems like it would take a long time for those splinters to grow all the way up into full bone tree bones.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. But here, I guess there they go.
That's
anyway. The power of Skele-Grow.
That's true.
Yeah.
What I do think is then kind of funny though, because obviously Ron and Hermione are not in the dormitory wondering about whether or not his bones had regrown, but then Harry runs into Percy and he's asking, have you seen them? And Percy says, no, I haven't. I hope Ron's not in another girl's toilet.
Yeah.
And I just wrote, welp.
Well, he is.
It says Harry forced a laugh, which is like the most relatable experience ever. Like, like sort of like, ha, you're someone who I'm talking to. Sorry, we'll get away from this.
Yeah.
And then promptly he goes to the girl's bathroom where in fact Ron and Hermione are.
Yes, I know. But not before Percy gives us a very interesting tidbit about how the points work in relation to Quidditch.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Right? Go into that a little bit.
Because he says, excellent flying yesterday. Really excellent. Gryffindor has just taken the lead for the House Cup. You earned 50 points. It's like, okay. Does that mean that if your team gets a win in Quidditch, you overall get 50 more points for the hat? Like, is that what it means?
This is where I think it's interesting that you phrased it like we learned more, because I almost feel like this information makes me feel like we learned less.
Oh.
Because like even the fact that he says you earned 50 points, like it's like, is that somebody being like, no, Harry's spectacular flying yesterday and his capturing of the snitch, or even the other teachers being like, hey, one of our faculty removed all the bones in his arm, so 50 points, like as like a consolation prize.
Ah, right. Yeah, there was a bludger cursed after him. So yeah, 50 yeah. points.
Right, right. He was in a school sanctioned sport where there were teachers present and nobody, including the referee who is there for the safety of our pupils, was able to recognize or notice that this was happening. And so we really need to cover our bases and provide him with non-monetary value points.
Well, okay, but in context with the rest of the sentence where he's talking about, he says, excellent flying, really excellent. Gryffindor has just taken the lead for the House Cup. So it sounds like because of your performance in the Quidditch match, we have taken the lead. Right. So I don't know. It sounds like my interpretation was that like if Gryffindor wins the Quidditch game, Gryffindor House gets 50 points for the House Cup.
Well, that's what I mean, though. It's like, yeah. It's like, why would you say it if this was just like a known aspect of like winning the game? Like,
right. Yeah.
Could you imagine scoring a touchdown in football and running over to the sideline and one of like your fellow teammates being like, dude, great job. You just scored 6 points. And they're like,
that's true.
They're like, it's like, yeah, I know.
I get that's true, too. It's like, is this just like clunky exposition for us, the reader?
Or well, if so, it's not helping.
You know what? We're still confused.
I'm more confused.
I know.
I like to think somehow Harry earned the 50 points. But I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know. I still think poorly phrased, still not clear for me.
Still not clear. Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. I love how when he does find, like Ron and Hermione in the bathroom, they immediately like, I guess, I don't know, validate his insecurities. Like, you gave us such a, we'd have come to meet you, but we decided to get started on the Polyjuice potion. So it's like, yes, we did think about that, but we did this instead.
Right.
Like, but we didn't forget. We know.
We know. We know. Yeah. How's your arm?
How's your arm? Okay? We heard about Colin. That's why we did this. We decided it was more important. The attacks are getting more serious. We got to get Malfoy. We thought you'd approve, right? You approve?
I know, but here's Harry being like, wow, my friends weren't here to meet me when I got up in the morning. But good news is I have some juicy goss to share with them. Unfortunately, they've already heard it.
Like, never mind, Harry. We're up to date on that.
Not to mention, we don't need you because now me and Ron, we're the dream team. We can make Polyjuice all on our own.
Apparently. What is interesting is that they have decided to start making it. And at this point, when they have started making it, they have not acquired all of the ingredients yet.
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised by that.
Right. And even when they do eventually get the ingredients and then like add them, Hermione's like, okay, 2 weeks from now, it'll be ready. And so that's kind of like an interesting one where it's almost like, I wonder if the potion is just sort of like, you can get it like 80% ready. It won't be ready until you add the final ingredients that make stuff happen.
Right.
But like, otherwise, you can have this as prepared as you might need. Because on some level, that might actually mean that Polyjuice at any point in time could be mostly prepared.
Right.
Like a 2 week lead time.
Right. There's like a maturing process, but you can get it to a certain point where it will like remain in like a stasis.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like waiting for that final ingredient.
Because really tip it over. I think that must be the case because she goes ahead and uses the knotgrass, which is that the one that had to be like harvested at full moon?
No, I think that's the flux weed.
Oh, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
Possibly, but it's hard to remember.
Well, whatever the case is, the whatever had to be harvested at midnight or at full moon, like that's not what they're missing. So it seems like they're okay to go ahead and put that in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree.
And it seems like I wouldn't want to waste that one because that's going to set you back a whole month.
Yeah, that would be a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I know it's kind of interesting to me that they're adding the ingredients now, especially because it seems like from like a writing perspective inside of the same chapter, you could have just been like, we're just about ready to go. We just need to go and like, we can add all the ingredients once we get these last two that we need and then just go and do the little classroom heist and then do everything all at once.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an interesting way to like, in my head, it means that Polyjuice can be made incrementally in this capacity of like whatever that crowning, you know, like ingredient is.
Yeah.
Like that's it. So
yeah, you just have to put those last couple things in there, wait 2 weeks and you're good to go.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. All right. But Harry does have some gossip, which is that the Chamber of Secrets has been opened before.
Yes.
Which you must have, I can imagine Harry being like, so flustered this morning, like, no one came to visit me. It's okay. Okay. I found him. I figured it out. All right. Ready to drop the goss. Oh, crap, they already know. Well, I bet you don't know this. Yes, nailed it.
Nailed it, yeah. It's like, eventually I'm going to be useful to this trio. No,
like, come on, guys. I got to do something.
I do think it's funny, though, that because I think the next page ends up saying, like, the news that Colin Creevy had been attacked and was now lying as though dead in the hospital wing had spread through the entire school by Monday morning. This is oddly reminiscent of, like, what Dumbledore says to Harry after his interaction with Quirrell in the chamber beneath the school, where he's like, it's a complete secret, so... Naturally, the whole school knows.
I know. Yeah, right. I mean, Colin Creevy attacked in the middle of the night by himself carrying grapes.
The grapes.
So, like, no reason necessarily for anyone to know. I mean, I guess it would get out, like, because the Gryffindors would notice that he wasn't there.
Sure.
Probably,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it does get out.
It gets out. It gets out. So everybody ends up knowing.
Can you? It feels like if they didn't tell people, it'd be like, wait, there was another attack and you didn't tell us? You know, it feels like, yeah, it feels like the information only gets out because rumor spreads, not because the teachers are like, oh, listen up, everyone. The danger has increased.
Right, right. Yes, yeah, yeah. It feels like this would be the type of thing where it's like when there's a snow day, it's like the like, school board of directors or whatever deciding whether or not to like close the school. So they're like ahead of it before you.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, it's not safe to drive. Don't come in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey guys, by the way, we had another attack last night. So basically don't go anywhere alone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They feels like they should be telling them that. Although Ron also says that, like, I want to know how come nobody's noticed the monster sneaking around the school. And it's like, Ron, I have news for you. That's still a mystery.
Yeah.
Like, why doesn't anyone see it? Like, it must come out at some points. Is it coming out for sink? Like, I guess it's in the pipes. That's the explanation. But, like, you know, it still must be coming out of the pipes and being giant in the meantime.
I know. Yeah. The fact that it can travel through the pipes, the basilisk, never really makes sense to me because I'm like, pipes are not that big.
Pipes aren't that big.
Yeah. Like, you know, like a standard drain pipe is like 2-inch PVC.
Yeah.
So, like, we're not dealing with, like, you know, big pipes that you could like crawl through or walk through.
Well, this might be some like extracurricular stuff where they like because even when the basilisk would have been put in the chamber, they wouldn't even had indoor plumbing.
True.
So like when the indoor, I think I want to say there's like an archived Pottermore article that explains how the Gaunts like opened the chamber and like made the pipes bigger for the sake of the basilisk.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That would make more sense. I remember the factoid of like sometime in like the 1870s, the Gaunts did exactly that. Like they were at the school, they had the ability to speak parcel mouth, so they could like open it up and do all these things. And it was sort of like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Some progress was made because that is like one of those like age old questions where it's sort of like when it comes to wizarding high school where there is no plumbing, it's sort of like, yeah, we still need bathrooms, don't we?
Yeah, we still need bathrooms.
Let's not worry about that.
Other canon information about bathrooms is that they use the indoor plumbing, even though they don't have to. Before indoor plumbing was invented, they would just vanish it just right from the floor.
It almost just seems like you would just continue with that process.
It just seems like maybe people are like, you know what, we could do that. Or
maybe the Muggles got something.
The Muggles got this one right.
That is kind of a funny one. The Chamber of Secrets, like the pure blooded mentality location, if there ever was one, is like being in, or is like the utilization of the basilisk's network is a Muggle invention.
That is kind of hilarious. I guess it wouldn't have been at the start, but
true. Yeah.
Right, but it is funny. Like, was it always a bathroom or did it like eventually become a bathroom?
Or what was it before then?
What was it before then?
I mean, you would almost have to think it was Salazar's office.
Oh, they turned Salazar's office into a bathroom.
I mean, it almost feels like certainly they did.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because, I mean, can we just jump ahead to it? Because, I mean, I feel like we almost have to. Because we get to the very end of this chapter where there is a reference to basically going through the gargoyle guarded statue to the headmaster's suite, which has the griffin shaped knocker on the door.
Right.
So the Griffin door.
The Griffin door.
Yeah, the door of Griffins. And we, I mean, I think it's easy to assume that what is the headmaster's office was in fact Gryffindor's like own private apartment, study.
Right. Living quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, it even says this is where Dumbledore lives.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's kind of interesting. So it's like, you know, if they all had like their like locations, I mean, you would kind of think like it would be such a strange choice on Salazar Slytherin to place his entrance in like a communal area.
Right. You know, that's like true.
Yeah. So
what I'm going to say, but it's, well, I guess the Slytherin common room, is, I guess Gryffindor common room is not near Dumbledore's office.
True. So there's no reason for Slytherin to be to like
be in the dungeon.
To be in the or dungeon. Something. Yeah.
It's hard to even say whether they would have had common rooms at the beginning either.
Also true.
Yeah.
Also true. Yeah. So, I mean, anyway, that would be like my sentiment or thought is that like this room would have had some kind of importance to, I mean, it must have had some kind of importance to Slytherin.
Yeah.
To like the man himself.
Obviously. Yeah. It must have stood out in some way. He wasn't like, I'll put it in the girl's bathroom. Or maybe he was. Because
I'm a quirky guy.
A quirky guy. No one will think to look there.
Okay.
Weird.
Yeah. That's a choice. Anyway, though, moving on from that, Hermione is sort of making a couple stabs here in the dark, and she says, maybe it can make itself invisible. Or maybe it can disguise itself, pretend to be a suit of armor or something. I've read about chameleon ghouls. I think it's kind of interesting because like if you were looking for like something that's like shape shifting and menacing, it does seem like she might stumble across Boggarts.
It does, sure, that's true.
You know, as like a potential. Because otherwise nobody knows what it itself looks like and
right.
disguise itself pretty well.
Oh, that'd be that'd be interesting if like no one can spot it because it keeps looking like different things.
Oh, here's an interesting question. So we know that the Boggart Dementors can still sort of have like the Dementor effect on Harry. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh, would a Boggart Basilisk?
Would it petrify you?
It feels like it would. I bet it wouldn't kill you.
It seems like it would kill you.
Like the diet version.
Because that's like, I would say that the Dementor Boggart is the diet version.
Yeah,
of,
like I don't think that Boggart could suck your soul out.
Right.
But it does make you feel the memories.
Right.
So yeah, I bet Boggart Basilisk could still petrify you, but not kill you.
Honestly, given the fact that they study this in year three and this is happening in year two, it stands to reason that some kid's greatest fear would be a basilisk.
Oh, Ginny Weasley against the Boggart has got to be a basilisk, right?
You would feel like it. Right? Yeah, right. Yeah. Or a diary.
Or a diary. Like,
no way.
No.
What is that, a small black notebook?
Everyone would be like, Ginny, what's that? It'd be like, don't worry about it. It's fine. It wasn't me. Shut
right,
up.
Right. Yeah. It's honestly, it's kind of like Newt, which is like the desk.
Yeah.
Or who else has one? Oh, I mean, Lupin, of course, is just like a moon.
The moon.
They just think it's like a ball.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I'm curious about chameleon ghouls. I mean, I guess that could be kind of
that never comes up again.
Yeah, because ghouls themselves, I think we talked about this last week, but like ghouls are not really like menacing creatures. It's kind of hard to know.
Does this suggest that chameleon ghouls could petrify people?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or her just not Hermione's best guess.
Ron responds kind of unusually to this. It just says, you read too much, Hermione. And I'm like, what? How is that hurting you? Like, what? You're in here brewing a potion with a library book you stole from the, brewing a potion from a book you stole from the library.
Yeah, it's but Ron lives underneath a ghoul.
I guess so.
So like in this particular instance, he might actually be like I can't tell if this would be like somebody who had like a fear of like, let's say like dogs or something, and you were like talking about like a Labrador.
Right.
And it's like, a Labrador is not gonna hurt you, okay? It's gonna be
I see what you mean. Like you're reading Hermione. No, it's not chameleon ghouls, calm down.
Right. Yeah. It's like we have a ghoul. I know a thing or two about ghouls.
I know that lives literally right above me.
Yeah.
All right. That being said, her reading does eventually lead her to the exact answer.
It does. So, it does indeed. Yeah. So I don't think Hermione's reading too much. It seems like it behooves her in every way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So keep at it, Hermione.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have some more clues about Ginny Weasley. She was distraught about finding out that Colin Creevy was attacked because, of course, Colin's sitting next to her in charms because they're in the same year.
Right.
You know, and it's definitely because he was attacked, not because she did it.
Yes.
It's like every time there's an attack, you get an update about Ginny. And it's like, you just never notice. You never notice.
I know. Yep. Yeah. No, it is really interesting. But it's also like, it would be kind of interesting to go through and find each of the lines because like we're putting such heavy emphasis on each of these sentences due to the format of the podcast.
Yeah.
But like it feels, and I mean, also this book is designed more for like a younger reader in its most traditional sense.
Yeah.
But like it is starting to feel so obvious to me.
I know. Like yeah, now as you're reading as it, but it's like, of course, it doesn't seem unusual. It's like, there was an attack. How are people at the castle reacting? Here's how Percy was. Ginny Weasley's having a pretty tough go of it because reasons, you know, we got to keep tabs on her because she's Ron's sister.
No, you know? I know. Well, yeah. That's the thing though. It's like, I'm pretty sure like when Mrs. Norris was attacked though, like the sentence was something along the lines of like, Ginny must have really liked cats because she seemed to be dealing with a really hard time with it.
Right.
And it's just like, and now the second attack, Ginny, who sat next to Colin in Charms, was really distraught. It's like, man, it seems like Ginny is always really upset when one of these attacks happens.
And then it's like, you even get the clue here where like Percy says he's writing to Mrs. Weasley to tell her Ginny was having nightmares. And it's like, you know, it almost like when you read that, it almost just comes off as like a threat that Percy is giving Fred and George. He's like, if you don't stop attacking, you know, scaring Ginny, which also such an older brother move. They're just like scaring her. But it's like when he says that, it feels like Percy might just be like bluffing to Fred and George. Like, if you don't stop, I'm going to write to Mom and tell her that you're giving Ginny nightmares or something. It's like, is she having nightmares, or are you just going to tell Mrs. Weasley she's having nightmares?
Oh, that's a good point. Especially once you get to know Ginny better, it seems highly unlikely that Ginny would ever be going and talking to Percy being like, I'm having nightmares.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, it is her first year and she is going through some stuff. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then we've got some like amulets and such, protective devices that started sweeping the school. Neville Longbottom bought a large, evil smelling green onion,
yep,
a pointed purple crystal, mm-hmm, and a rotting newt tail. I highlighted these because once again, this was a Jay versus Ben question once upon a time.
Yep.
And it was sort of like, the rotting newt tail.
The rotting newt tail.
I mean, I don't know that I would have remembered the evil smelling green onion anyway, and a pointed purple crystal means basically nothing to me, but how anybody could pull rotting newt tail out of their hat.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm probably not going to remember it, even though I highlighted it for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Now, is it also true that in their fifth year, Neville is like buys into like the OWL study aid stuff?
Oh, does he?
Is this like a Neville thing? He's just like,
it's like, wait, there's a solution.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's him or not, because I think maybe it's like, I don't even know who. I feel like Hermione is like, maybe Ron wants to buy some or something.
Right.
And it's like actually just.
Yeah, like ground up. It's something gross.
Yes, it's something super gross. It's like, oh.
I feel like someone does buy it. I don't know. There are a bunch of like study aids that are going around, and it'd be so funny if it was Neville. He's just like so susceptible to these like sort of like snake oil like things.
Yeah. Next thing we know, he's like doing like a multi-level marketing scheme. Yeah,
yeah. Right. Neville is definitely trying to sell you some Cutco knives.
Yes. 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 Oh, poor Neville. And actually, it is really sad because like everybody's sort of like, Neville, you're a pureblood. You're definitely not in any danger. And then Neville compares himself to Filch.
I know.
And it's like, oh, Neville. Yeah, he says, they went for Filch first, though, and everyone knows I'm almost a squib. It's like, oh, Neville, poor kid.
The sentence doesn't even make sense. Like, it's like 100% or zero. It's not almost a squib. You know, it's such a binary thing.
No, I know. Yeah, I just feel bad for Neville. He's just going through some stuff, man.
Of course. Let's see. What do we got here? So yeah, we already sort of talked about how Hermione then says they still need the bicorn horn and the boom slang skein. So yeah. And how it's like, oh, I guess they just started, before they got it all. Hermione's suggestion is that one of them needs to create a diversion in Snape's class so that she can sneak into the cupboard and steal stuff, which doesn't seem like a great plan to me, but I liked the line here because Harry says he thought causing mayhem in Snape's class was about as safe as poking a sleeping dragon in the eye, which is just so similar to the Hogwarts house or the Hogwarts school motto of never tickle a sleeping dragon.
I know. I wrote the exact same thing. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so funny. Like, I wonder if this is like a sentiment that is actually like if it wouldn't be like an uncommon phrase for a Hogwarts student to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's something very much along this exact, you know, set of lines. Cause it's like,
yeah,
it is our school motto.
There it is. Yeah. Never poke a sleeping dragon in the eye.
Probably good advice. Let's see. So they're getting prepped to, or they're hoping to be able to do the Polyjuice trick over winter break.
Yes.
Because once again, Malfoy along with Harry, Ron, and Hermione are all going to be staying behind. So it's like a prime opportunity to go and kind of sneak in there
where there's less people there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
Let's see.
Yeah. So what is interesting here, though, is what the diversion they ultimately create is that they are making swelling solutions in potions class, and Harry lobs a filibuster firework into Goyle's potion, and it splashes all over the whole class and causes mayhem. But while the plan works, what I was so surprised by here is that it means that, because what happens is people get hit by the swelling solution and then like they begin to swell up wherever they got hit. But like, what's crazy about, what's surprising about it to me is that it means Goyle was successfully brewing the potion.
Oh, you're right.
Like, he was doing it right because it does what it's supposed to do. I'm like, look at Goyle.
Way to go.
Look at, I was like, what a small unsung victory for Goyle in this moment that he made that potion.
He made it. He's somehow against all odds. Goyle was actually successfully, because I'm pretty sure, like it says, Snape paused to sneer at Harry's watery potion. So yeah. It's like, even Harry is not doing a very good job. Granted, he's distracted by about to, you know.
Yeah, his plan.
Yeah, but to totally sink a three-pointer.
I know, right?
Firework from across the room.
I know that somehow Snape doesn't see. I will say, there was like three occasions, I think, in this chapter, and I'll try and bring them up as we get to them, where I felt like Snape is being like weirdly responsible as a teacher in ways you don't see him. Like, as soon as this happens, he says, anyone who's been splashed, come here for a deflating draft. And it's like, that's a yes. You're not like blaming anyone. You're not like, you know, being mean to anyone. It's just like, oh yeah, hold on, I'll fix it. I got you. Come here. Everyone come here. I got it. Don't worry. I know. We got it.
Right.
He's like acting like a real teacher for once. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Cause I feel like any other time where anybody gets like splashed with potion, he's like, you know, Longbottom, go up to the hospital wing, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's sort of like, it's almost like what he's like, I could fix it myself, but instead you can walk through the hallways of this castle and let everybody know you messed up.
Or like when Hermione gets hit in the face with the tooth growing charm and he's like, I see no difference.
It's right, like, right.
Like, dude.
Come on, man. It's like,
you can fix it. I know you could fix it.
Also, you're a teacher. You have responsibilities here.
He's actually doing the teacher thing.
He is actually doing the teacher thing. But then the next page, though, he does say, if I ever find out who threw this, Snape whispered, I shall make sure that person is expelled.
Yeah, he does say that.
Which is kind of funny because it seems like he then sort of like makes eye contact with Harry, and Harry says, he knew it was me. I could tell.
Yeah. And it's like, I just wrote, yep.
Yep. I know. It's like, I mean, he is illegitimate. So this is like one of those things where it's like, is this just an empty threat on Snape's behalf? Because he definitely knows it was Harry.
Yeah. Oh, he 1,000% knows that it was. And then Ron's just like, Snape can't prove it was you. And it's like, I think Ron is right. Like, Snape knows it was Harry, and Harry knows Snape knows it was Harry. But like, I cannot quite prove it.
Right.
We all know what happened, Potter. But I knew you were throwing fireworks. But yeah. Also, I mean, I guess you could like veritas seramim or something, but that's probably illegal.
It feels like it should be.
Yeah,
using a truth-telling potion in high school.
On students, yeah. Like, I mean, later Umbridge does do it, so.
Yeah, but that's Umbridge. Yeah. She's the worst.
Oh, she's definitely doing it illegally.
Yes, for sure. But so then moving on from that, though, we get the Dueling Club, which honestly, this is even kind of like an interesting little like tidbit for the school to be like, yeah, why don't we do something like make the kids feel a little bit more empowered, kind of give them a greater sense of like how to defend themselves, you know, that type of thing. We sort of get like a couple of like little tidbits that like Flitwick was once upon a time a dueling champion when he was young.
I know. What?
That's like one of those details though, where it's like, why is Flitwick not teaching? Like, again, you know, you would have to assume that like the staff is getting together and like, kids are kind of spooked. We should probably do something that's going to make them feel better. Maybe this is something that can help. Flitwick, you have a lot of experience, right?
Oh, like, yeah. Well, it's not even the school. It's not even like Dumbledore or the school putting on. It's like Lockhart's idea.
Right. Which even that is sort of like, it's kind of like, okay, Lockhart. Yeah,
not your worst move.
Not a terrible idea. I mean, granted, you're not going to be good at it, but you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you were just asking to be put on display here.
Yes. And on display, I'm glad you said it exactly like that. He'll be on display in resplendent. He will be resplendent in robes of deep plum.
Deep plum. I did. I also circled deep plum, and I was like, I don't know what color he was wearing at the dueling club for trivia reasons. Yes,
for trivia reasons.
Yep. Also, I think it's the planning of it is quite impromptu, because they put up the notice that they're starting a dueling club that day. They're like, first meeting's tonight. Guess we're joining. Like, what if you missed the bulletin?
Right, right. I know. Yeah. I doubt you could, because it sounds like everyone is there.
I know. This is like a very popular bulletin board in the common room, you know?
Okay. You know, so that's another one that's kind of fascinating, because it's not dueling club for second years. It's dueling club for the whole school.
I wrote that note too. I'm like, is there any older students here at all?
Right, right. Yes. Because I feel like as Harry, Ron, and Hermione get older, they will like refer to like first and second years as like looking so like small and such.
Yeah.
It's like, can you imagine if you're doing like a school-wide event and the people you bring up on stage to like be like your center token people, it's like, you're really going to go with the 12-year-olds, huh?
Yeah.
Not us who have like passed Defense Against the Dark Arts, you know?
Right. Like we I'm like a sixth year. I know how to do a shield charm and Expelliarmus. Like, it's all pretty basic. I can probably demonstrate it.
Yeah. What's Cedric Diggory doing right now?
Yeah. Where is great question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is Cedric Diggory right now?
He should be demonstrating.
Yeah.
Because I bet he's good at it.
I bet he is good at it. You know, in fact, we know he's good at it because he makes, yeah. Anyway, the other crazy thing here is that Snape is helping at all. Like, Lockhart, like, why is Snape helping?
I mean, the only thing I can think, because he, like, immediately ousts him in dueling. Because I would argue that I think Snape is probably one of the best duelists in the series.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, in my mind, I'm like, I wonder if, like, Snape is approached by Lockhart, and Snape's like, you mean I get to duel you in front of everyone? Okay.
I mean, that could absolutely be it. My theory is that this might be a little bit more Dumbledore's big plan-y situation here.
Elaborate on that.
Well, okay, so there's a couple of things.
Okay.
The fact that Snape is there at all is just, like, this is Lockhart's idea and he's coming to be his assistant. Like, I agree, it might be fun to blast him off stage, which he does do.
He does.
And that's awesome. But like, it just seems like it seems out of character for him to want to help. But there is a point later on where he specifically pairs up Harry and Draco together. And then when they're having their duel, he whispers to Draco, like, summon a snake, basically. Like, tells him to, either tells him to summon the snake or gives him the spell to summon the snake.
I see what you're saying.
So, like, it's like, it's like Dumbledore is like, Severus, I'd like you to oversee this club and try and arrange it such that Mr. Potter and Mr. Malfoy fight each other and make sure that Draco summons a snake. Because I have a theory about Harry and a certain ability of his or something.
we need a way to prove this.
Like, yeah, I think Snape is surprised when Harry talks to the snake.
Yeah, I would agree.
But
yes.
It wouldn't be past Dumbledore, I think, to tell Snape to arrange a situation in which a snake appears.
This is very much like that, like, keep an eye on Quirrell for me situation.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not really going to tell you, like, why, but, like, keep an eye on him.
But, like, yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna keep an eye on that kid.
Right.
I don't know why Dumbledore would suspect that Harry could talk to snakes just yet.
Yeah.
But, like, the other thing is that, like, Snape leans down and whispers to Malfoy something, which is definitely the snake spell. And then the moment it's summoned, he's like, I'll get rid of it, Potter. Like, he doesn't let anything happen. He's just sort of like, okay, the snake's there.
Right.
Like, you know, he doesn't let it play out. He doesn't let Harry fight the snake or lose to the snake or anything. He just immediately is like, ha ha, Malfoy made a snake. I'll get rid of it.
Right. Yes, that's true. So, I mean, that would mean that Snape is only so much in on the plan. Like, he's not really expecting anything to come of this.
Right.
So maybe after the fact, Snape would be sort of like, okay, interesting that Dumbledore would have asked me to do that, and then that happened.
Right.
You know, because that would be pretty telling all of a sudden. I'm trying to think if there's anything that would have happened in the story so far that would start to lead Dumbledore to believing that Harry could be connected to Voldemort in this way.
I mean, I guess he could think that when Voldemort blasted himself, the piece of soul attached to him. Like, does he know about the scar prickling at all?
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm thinking in my head is, like, does he know that Tom Riddle is a Parseltongue himself?
I think so, yes. He does know that. And he knows that Tom Riddle opened it before, because that was the cliffhanger at the end of the last chapter. It was not who, but how.
Okay, yeah, then I think it fits very well.
Actually,
because I think what would be happening here would be that, because we know eventually Dumbledore goes to the Gaunt residence.
Yeah.
And we don't know, no, not Dumbledore. He gets the memory of the Gaunt residence where like they're speaking in parcel tongue and Harry's like,
yeah.
why is he acting so strange?
Who's
the ministry official who's there? Do you remember?
Bob Ogden.
Nice Thank piece you. Of trivia.
Thank you.
So Bob Ogden is there and Bob doesn't understand what Morphin is saying, but Harry does. And he's like, why is he being so thick? Like, you know, come on, what's up with that? So we don't know when Dumbledore would have collected that particular memory, but if the Chamber of Secrets is being opened and Dumbledore himself knows that it's been done before, and if he knows that it was done by Tom Riddle, and that could only mean that Tom Riddle could speak parcel tongue. And then that now that it's happening again, he might be like, okay, I have a theory of what's happening.
Right.
Harry maybe doesn't know.
Do you think maybe he suspects it is Harry? Like Voldemort's like controlling him somehow?
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. I mean, if he has an inkling that, because I think it's by the end of this book that Dumbledore will say, like, I think a piece of Voldemort's soul latched onto you. That's why you can speak to snakes and everything. So like if Dumbledore's working on that theory all throughout the year,
yeah.
It's very possible that Dumbledore is like, it might be Harry, like probably not.
Not willingly. Harry, like Voldemort in Harry.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But it's like, how much can that, like he doesn't know about the diary. We know he doesn't know about the diary.
We know he doesn't know about that. Or yeah. Like Horcruxes in general. Although this would inadvertently make Harry a Horcrux.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Ginny is sort of temporarily a Horcrux.
Yeah.
Whilst under the influence of the diary. But so probably what's more happening is that Dumbledore's immediate assumption at this point in time is that it's the piece of soul inside of Harry that's doing it. So, okay. I like that though. So
but
then,
he still doesn't know it's a basilisk either.
Right.
Right.
I guess he doesn't know it's a basilisk.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Unless he does, and we just don't know that he does. But if he does, then it seems like he should be telling people to like look around corners with mirrors and stuff.
It feels like he's being a little lax in his
duties.
He's
being a little lax because people could super duper die.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but instead, what we currently have is the Dueling Club.
Yes.
So let's move forward a little bit of that because this is just an overall super fun scene. I mean, Lockhart is being straight up like intolerable
during this
whole sequence. Like, let me introduce my assistant, Professor Snape, said Lockhart, flashing a wide smile. He tells me he knows a tiny little bit about dueling himself. And
even that's a little foreshadowing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
It's like everyone's always like, oh, Flitwick's the dueling champion. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Snape. I think Snape's the best duelist at the school.
I know. I feel like in Half-Blood Prince, the fact that he can just like so effortlessly block every single spell that Harry's blasting at him after the lightning struck tower. It's sort of like Snape can operate at a 10 and he's using level 1 abilities to block Harry.
Yeah.
And not for nothing, but Harry's pretty good.
Harry is pretty good. Actually, we keep comparing like Harry versus Lockhart, how like Lockhart will say he did something, Harry actually does it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a line here from Harry where it says, Snape's upper lip was curling. Harry wondered why Lockhart was still smiling. If Snape had been looking at him like that, he'd have been running as fast as he could in the opposite direction. And it's like, I just made a note there. I'm like, actually, when push comes to shove, you are chasing him down trying to attack him in that situation.
It's true.
And it's like, it's not like, you're not smiling at him, you're not running, you are chasing him.
Yes.
When that moment arrives in book 6.
I know.
Oh, Harry.
Yeah,
you're so brave.
you're going to do so great.
You're
going to
do so great. Yeah. So I just thought that was a fun little one as well.
Yeah. So, okay. So then we finally get Lockhart and Snape kind of like teeing up for their duel. We get a line here that specifically says, then they raise their wands like swords in front of them. And I do think straight up that just is foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Like a reference to the Sword of Gryffindor being something in there. So like this sort of like sword references coming about. I mentioned it earlier with Nearly Headless Nick's, you know, sort of like chapter art where he's wielding a sword, possibly being like a little hint. This one I do just straight up think is like swords.
Ron even says something like, you reckon Slytherin's monsters knows how to duel or something? And it's like, well, the basilisk doesn't. Harry does duel it with a sword, I suppose. But eventually him and Voldemort do straight up duel.
They do.
Several times.
Yep.
Yep.
The next line though that we get though is Lockhart says, on the count of three, we will cast our first spells. Neither of us will be aiming to kill, of course. It's like, Okay, obviously.
Yeah, duh. Like, not about to watch one of you murder the other.
It's what a fun dueling club. So hilarious when one of our teachers died.
I remember it's like, that.
It's like, wow.
Yeah.
So no, that kind of goes without saying.
Yeah. Oh, this is the other thing about Dumbledore's big plan is the spell that Snape uses is Expelliarmus. Is it like, is that what Dumbledore is like, make sure you're there, make a Snape happen, and make sure Harry learns the disarming spell.
Right.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. That feels like a big one because, I mean, Expelliarmus, this is the first time in the series we'll ever see the word uttered out loud, but it is ultimately the spell that Harry uses in the final duel with Voldemort.
Yes.
Like, which I think for the longest time, when I was a kid reading the books or like, you know, like earlier on reading the books, it would frustrate me that he uses Expelliarmus. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, really, Harry? Like, after all this time, you're still using like the disarming spell? And it's like, oh, because it's like,
it's time to take action, Harry.
I know. Yeah. It's like, there's a piece of me that like wants him to be like grittier, you know, or something, but it's like, no, that's not who Harry is. He's just like infinitely noble. Like even down to the very last moment, his instinct is to use something that is disarming, not destructive.
I mean, it's the perfect counterspell because it's like the exact opposite of killing.
Yes, it is.
It's like, it makes me also think of like a Avatar the Last Airbender.
Okay.
Like, this is Aang's move too. Like,
oh, interesting.
He doesn't, like, he struggles for like the whole third season, like, I'm going to have to kill the Fire Lord.
Right.
And it's like, everyone's like, he even like asks all the other avatars and they're like, yeah, you're going to have to like, for sure. Are you crazy? Like, yes. And it's like, Aang finds a way and he doesn't, you know, so anyway.
And so does Harry.
And so does Harry.
Yeah. Which this is another one of those things I always think is kind of interesting is that there's the dazzling flash of scarlet light. This is always like, there's a huge mirroring effect that's always happening with like the colors red and green between Harry and Voldemort, where Harry has the green eyes, Voldemort has red eyes, but then Harry has like the Gryffindor allegiance, which is of course red, whereas Slytherin has the green allegiance.
Green.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then actually, yeah, I highlighted Scarlet Light too, because like they always show Expelliarmus as being red in the movies. And like, I always, whenever I imagine Expelliarmus, there's no like laser or like energy beam at all. It's just sort of like, it just like, it's like a invisible spell in my brain, but I'm like, I was wrong. It is red.
It's just right there.
It's just right there.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Laser. I like that.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about laser beams in a second here when we get to the basilisk again.
Okay.
Our heat vision friend.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Heat vision. So yeah. So we get Expelliarmus. Lockhart goes absolutely flying. We get the line from Hermione. Do you think he's all right? And Harry and Ron, who together say, who cares? I love that because I love, it's funny because from a distance, I love Lockhart, but reading this book, I'm like, this guy sucks so bad.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a fun character in the movies and stuff. And it's like, it's fun to make fun of him as a person. He's the worst.
He is the worst.
Yeah. But this is another one. Like, it was his idea for the dueling club. And then he gets hit by it and he says, that was a disarming charm. And it's like, oh, you did know. So that is correct.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. Oh, and then this, I was so annoyed about this, but if you don't mind me saying, it was very obvious what you were about to do. And it's like, I'm sorry, is the line in the book very and not pretty obvious? Like, what? Not that line.
Not that line.
That line we haven't been misquoting the whole time.
We do
no.
this. We do this all of the time. I feel like we'll like have like a line we like fall obsessed with, and then like we'll go back and like reread the source material and like we are saying it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, in the movie he says pretty obvious.
No, he does. Yeah. He does. Yeah.
But
yeah.
So we have a reason. But the movie is the actual text is very obvious. And I was like, Oh, come on.
I know. We actually had a whole candle in the month of January designed around pretty obvious.
Yes, we did.
And we could have called it very obvious instead.
Yes.
And I don't think people would have got it.
It
would not have been very obvious.
Pretty obvious is definitely the correct word. It is the true name of this line, and it's just wrong in the books. I'm sorry. It's a rare case where the book is wrong, and pretty obvious is exactly what it's supposed to be, and it's not. So that's a bummer. But also, if you want those candles, it's at wizardingcandles.com.
Yeah, we have a monthly subscription. It's a lot of fun. Each one has a little charm hiding deep beneath the wax.
Yes.
So as it melts down, you can get like the little collectible charm in there. It's really fun.
Yeah, you can. The one this month is called Potions Master. It's got like a nice like tobacco-y smell to it. It's very good and lovely.
It is very good. Yes. It's like a delicious scent.
A delicious scent. Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes. Indeed.
One of my favorites. So if you want to pick one of those up, it's wizardingcandles.com.
There you go.
There you go.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership, because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast, but with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
All right, let's see. Next up, we get moved through the crowd. Lockhart teams up Neville with JFF, Justin Finch Fletchley.
Yes.
Yep. That doesn't seem like it goes so well. Where's my next moment here? Next we have the duel with Harry and Draco. Long awaited. So they almost duel in book one, and they finally get to duel each other in book two. And I think this is hilarious. Okay. The first spell Harry hits Malfoy with in a duel is Recta Sempra, which is like the exact opposite spell of Sectum Sempra, which is the last spell he will cast at him in a duel.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. I even highlighted Recta Sempra, but yeah, so Recta Sempra makes him like basically double over in laughter.
Oh my gosh, this is just hilarious to me as well, that this is the spell. Harry's like, he's finally dueling Malfoy and he just turns it into a tickle fight.
He does. He's like, it's like, that's it, Malfoy. Here comes Tickles.
Time to get ready for Tickles.
I know.
But to Malfoy's credit, he's like, no way, Potter. This is a dance battle.
Tarantulagra.
You guys, this is the silliest duel that's ever happened.
I know. It's like,
you guys hate each other. Or you just like having fun.
Harry Potter and Stomp the Yard too.
I know. Tickle fight turns into dance battle.
Yes.
Let's
yes.
go. Oh man. Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was so funny. The first spell he hits him with is Recta Sempra, which is a tickling spell. And eventually he will hit him with Sectum Sempra, which is a, you know, sword slash spell.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Much, much more menacing.
Much more deadly. We really grow up around here.
Do you think so? It says stop, screamed Lockhart, but Snape took charge. Finite incantatum. To me, that honestly seems like a catch-all spell that could work in a lot of specific instances. Like this is not like, this is more like your general cure. It's like the Tylenol counter curse.
Right.
It's like, you're not feeling well, take some Tylenol. Like, you know, that's like the like go-to. It's like, because it seems like Finite Incantatum is basically just like, stop making spells be spells.
Right. Yeah. You know? Like all these basic spells, just stop that.
Just, Just wipe this.
End of the effects.
Right.
Yeah. I don't feel like that would work on like everything, but everything these kids are capable of doing, assuming that only the second year showed up, apparently.
Apparently. Yes.
Yeah. Like, we're Fred and George in this. Like, they're not missing this, right?
No way. No way.
No way.
We also get, like, a little bit of the setup for the eventual Millicent Bulstrode and Hermione situation. Mm-hmm. So, Hermione believes during the Dueling Club she has collected a hair from Millicent Bulstrode so that she can successfully transform into her when they do the Polyjuice thing. And as it turns out, she is not collecting one of Millicent's own hairs, but instead from her cat.
Do you want to know a super fun fact?
I want to know the most fun fact.
Okay, so when they were making the movies, like all the kids have like stunt doubles and stuff, or like stand-ins and stuff, because there's like child labor laws that when you're a kid, you can't work for more than 4 hours on set. So like a lot of times they like will, you know, they'll have the stand-ins go in there for a while to like save time for like Emma Watson or whatever be on set later that day. Well, apparently there was like a TikTok yesterday that I saw where Emma Watson's stunt double for the movie, whenever you see Hermione in the full cat makeup, that is not Emma Watson. It is, in fact, her stunt double, because Emma Watson was having like a reaction to the makeup in the cat costume.
No,
but since she
way.
Was so transformed, it didn't matter. They could just like use her stunt double instead. So when you see Hermione in the movies, it's not Emma Watson. It is her stunt double.
Whoa!
I know.
That's so crazy. And it's even interesting that she was having a bad reaction to the costume, because in universe, she's having a bad reaction to the Polyjuice.
It's so perfect.
It's so perfect.
It's like perfect in every way.
Maybe they just actually took Polyjuice and this is just what
this
actually
is just what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
They really committed.
Yeah. You know? It's
method acting.
I know, right? It's like, it's so funny. Yeah, you're right. In the Polyjuice scene, her stunt double becomes the actual character on screen.
Yes.
It's like, how perfect.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
Yeah. So I like that. Also, there's a line in here where Lockhart tries to get Neville and Justin to be like the star duo that's gonna show everyone how to do, I guess, a shield charm. But Snape steps in and says, Longbottom causes devastation with the simplest spells, which is just like, I feel like good setup for next book with the Boggart. Just like Snape being just mean to Neville. But also, maybe this is more Dumbledore's big plan, where he's like, no, hold on, I have instructions. We need to get Harry and Malfoy up here. I have a plan.
Yeah, that's maybe like, I think that makes like a little bit more. It's kind of interesting that they like choose like Longbottom in this particular instance, because I feel like Ron's wand is the one that's like been acting up. So it's like, it feels like you could have been like, Ron, how about you and this other person do it? And it's like, I don't know about Ron's wand.
Right.
Like it's not doing so hot.
I think he's with Seamus.
Is he with Seamus? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other thing that I think is kind of interesting about this line is we get the phrase, said Snape, gliding over like a large malevolent bat.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of our many little tiny hints to the possibility that Snape is in fact a vampire.
A vampire.
Because we know that vampires, even voyages with them per Lockhart's published works, are in fact actual things in the Wizarding World.
Sanguini,
yes, at Slughorn's party.
Slughorn's party is
a vampire. We know that Snape has a rather pale complexion.
Mm-hmm.
He's always out in the middle of the night. He can constantly be described as bat-like in characteristic. He can fly without the aid of a broomstick, similar to a bat.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a bat animagus.
Maybe that would almost be less surprising to me if he was a bat animagus.
That would seem, Snape's such an accomplished wizard. It wouldn't surprise me if he just even quietly like realized the Marauders were doing it. It's like, well, that's it. I'm doing it too.
That is exactly it. He is an unregistered animagus out of spite.
Out of spite.
If James Potter can do it, I can too.
You better believe I'm in on this.
You had better believe. Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, I always, that was like one of those theories that we made once upon a time. And like when I started it, I was sort of like, I feel like I can make a compelling argument. And then like by the end of the theory, I was like, I'm sort of buying into
it
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's there. Vampire Snape walks over to Malfoy, bent down and whispered something in his ear. Malfoy smirked too. See, Snape gives him the snake. He tells him to summon the snake. Like, why would he do that? Like, there it is right there. Like, that is such Dumbledore's big plan.
Yeah. That play. No, that's very interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting. Okay. Okay. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. But then we get like such a good setup here. And this is another movie scene that I think plays out really nicely. But basically, Harry and Draco are going to be facing off once again. And Malfoy says, "Scared," muttered Malfoy. And Harry responds with, "You wish."
Right. This says he does it like under his breath so that like only Malfoy could hear it. But like, this is a movie scene that is just so much better.
Oh, I know. Than
the
book
where they're like on the stage and like just absolutely catcalling each other, you know, before Tickle Fight round two.
I know. I guess. Yeah. Like, it's about to go down.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. But I mean, I think this is like one of those things like where when you're like in middle school, you wish. Cause I mean, every single time if I ever had like an argument or a dispute or something like that, like in my middle school, high school years, it would be like 3 days later when I would think of the perfect comeback.
Yeah.
Like instead for me, it would have been like scared, Ben. And it'd be like, yeah, a little bit. I'm kind of freaking out. Honestly, we got a lot of people watching.
No.
And like 3 days later, I'm like, you wish. I should have said
you wish
I was scared, mm-hmm. because then it would have seemed a lot more confident. But instead, nope, I didn't do it.
Yep.
Nope. Okay. So then I love it though, because the very next line is Lockhart cuffed Harry merrily on the shoulder. Just do what I did, Harry. What? Drop my wand?
Like he totally calls him out.
What does Lockhart say after that? Oh no, he wasn't listening. Okay, it says it as the very next sentence. But either way, I feel like Harry's just quiptacular.
I know. He's just like in the zone.
Firing on all.
Yeah.
But yeah, then Malfoy raises his wand and quickly bellowed Serpensortia. Is that how you pronounce it?
Serpensortia.
Serpensortia. There we go. Even better.
Different than what he says in the movie, which is like Summonsortia or something.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it is, but so then of course the snake comes barreling out of his wand. This is another one of those instances where it's like weird question, but you think you could eat the snake?
I know, right? Like, is that a real snake or is it just like made of magic?
Magic
over there. Like, did Malfoy just make a snake?
Because I mean, if so, it feels like once again Harry, Ron, and Hermione could have been well fed during all of their camping trips in Deathly Hallows.
Snake.
It's like, why are we eating so much snake? Because we're fighting the Dark Lord, and he's the heir of Slytherin. It's symbology. It's
symbolic. Look, and they're super easy to make. Malfoy, remember in our second year when Snape whispered a spell into his ear, and then he like mastered it 30 seconds later? It's so easy.
It's so easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean. Meanwhile, Harry's also using the exact same spell that he learns in this exact same lesson. So it's just like a very impactful day for everybody.
I know, right? No one uses the snake summoning charm ever again.
Right.
It seems like Harry could have done this like real reconnaissance work with this spell. You know?
True.
But like, boom, snake. Yo, snake, you understand me? Go listen to that conversation over there and come back and tell me. Because apparently, like when he talks to the snake, it does exactly what he says. They always describe Parseltongue as like the ability to talk to snakes, but I'm like, is it to talk to snakes or to like command snakes?
This was something that was kind of interesting too, because I read the same thing. So he says, leave him alone, and miraculously and inexplicably, the snake slumped onto the floor, docile as a thick black garden hose, its eyes now on Harry. Harry felt the fear drained out of him. He knew the snake wouldn't attack anyone now, though how he knew it, he couldn't have explained. And so this is kind of interesting because it's like in addition to being like a parcel mouth, it also seems like he's got like an intuition around snakes. Like he can understand like their inner drive, their inner motivation, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So that I actually feel like it's kind of like an unsung attribute of his abilities.
But that's like kind of present when he's talking to the snake at the zoo too.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's like he's sort of like being able to like really get inside of like what they're experiencing or feeling.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. It seems like I'm surprised that it's not an ability that's used more by Harry. Like maybe he just doesn't like that he shares it with Voldemort, which like, I guess that's fine, but it just seems like it'd be pretty useful. He could have like helpful snakes, you know?
I know. Yeah. I mean, at some point in time, he has Creature and Dobby following Malfoy for him.
Yeah. And it's right. Like it's like you could have a snake do that, bro.
It would be pretty cool. It would be.
Oh my gosh. This would have, I mean, heck, this is your whole plan, right? Go get a snake. Be like, yo, snake, go into the Slytherin common room. They probably don't even think it's that weird to see.
All you have to do is Slytherin.
Slytherin.
Amazing. We're so funny.
Right? Then just come back and tell me what. Like, I bet if you see a snake in the Slytherin common room, it's like people are like, yeah, it's a snake, whatever. There's snakes all over the place in here, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Who's to say the difference between like the statues carved into the marble and real actual snakes that,
yeah.
that are...
Yeah. You know what? Harry is really, really whiffing on this ability.
It's true. It's true.
Yes.
I mean, even going forward, like, you know, it seems like Crookshanks and Wormtail, all of next book, it's sort of like you could have a spy on the inside.
Yeah.
Or you could just have... a snake eat Wormtail.
Yeah. Oh my God. Can you? But this is the other reason. Yeah. If Harry just had a pet snake, like this snake could be like, you know, that rat's a dude, right? He'd be like, wait, what? Like that guy, that rat is a dude.
Definitely not a rat.
Definitely not a rat. I can tell. Like, what do you mean it's a dude? Like a person. That's a person over there. That's a person. Harry, come on.
Harry.
I would love it if he named the snake like Harry Jr. Because they're not hairy.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little.
No hair at all.
Little HJ.
Little HJ.
Yeah. Harry so should have had a pet snake.
It would have been great.
Oh my gosh. So many problems would have been solved.
Maybe that's something we should have or could have worked into our Harry Potter what if he was in Slytherin.
Yeah.
Well, like instead of having Hedwig, he has a pet snake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, because you're right. Well, we give him a much better relationship with the basilisk in that particular story.
Yeah,
he does have
yeah.
a pet snake in a way.
He does.
You know,
does.
How does he win the second task, Ben?
Pet snake.
Riding giant pet snake. Oh man,
that was the best part about the whole series. Everything to do with the basilisk, it's always so much fun.
The basilisk is the best.
So Ron is pretty shocked basically because he's like, hey, we should probably leave, like, pronto stat, it's time to get away from all these people. Also, we got to talk because you didn't tell me you could talk to snakes, and that's very sus.
Yeah, real sus, Harry.
Yeah,
he says, I heard you speaking apostle tongue, snake language, you know, regular thing. Ron is really unhelpful and says, could have been saying anything. No wonder it was just in panic. You sounded like you were egging the snake on or something. He was creepy, you know? It's like, Ron, read the room, dude.
I know. Harry's freaking out a little bit over here. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is kind of crazy that he can speak a different language and doesn't realize that he's doing it.
I know. Like, it is. Yeah.
That's sort of like a fascinating
little bit
like,
of magic
aspect
there.
Of it. But yeah, then it's funny to me as well because it's like, do you want to tell me what's wrong with stopping a massive snake biting off Justin's head? And I'm like, okay, wait. How big is this snake?
How big was this snake, man?
It's like, I mean, because it would take a big snake to bite someone's head off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would.
But anyway, that's when we learned that being able to talk to snakes is something that Salazar Slytherin was famous for. That's why the symbol of Slytherin House is a serpent. This feels like it should have been information that could have been figured out a lot sooner, maybe.
Oh, I know. Like, people are like, what's the monster? No one's like, are there any like snake monsters it could be?
Can we think of anything that's scary and snakish?
Right.
Oh, a snake. All snakes.
It's a snake.
Yeah.
What do you know?
Yeah.
What do you know?
We also get confirmation in universe, and I don't know if this has come up any other time, but in talking about Salazar Slytherin, Hermione's basically like, you could be his like great-great-great-grandson or something because he lived about 1,000 years ago. So for all we know, you could be.
I highlighted that sentence too, though, and I'm like, how are the dates of Slytherin's life not known as part of recorded history?
It feels like, so shocking.
It's so suspicious that they don't know when the castle was founded. Like they're like it feels like there must be magic regarding the secret or something. Like there has got to be some sort of magical concealment about the dates because there's no reason you wouldn't know.
There's no reason you wouldn't know, and it even seems highly unlikely that such an iconic figure in the wizarding world, his lineage wouldn't be like well documented.
Yes, yes, exactly. Especially because like Voldemort was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, the Gaunts are, they're not that far gone at this point.
They're not that far gone. They're pretty loud.
They're about pretty loud.
About their
affiliation. Like we should be able to trace it back up to the Peverils and to the Slytherins and when this happened.
Yeah.
And like, when did he have the kid? Who was his wife?
We don't know.
We don't know.
But maybe one day we will.
Maybe one day.
Who knows? Can only aspire to such things.
We can.
Either which way, I think as the chapter starts to like kind of cruise forward a little bit, it's to the point where I'm almost curious whether or not like Harry similar to the like Defense Against the Dark Arts position, is just cursed with bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole like narrative that's being spun around him, for one, the whole school has just learned that he can speak to snakes, which makes him look very suspicious, especially when the school is currently being attacked by something.
Yeah.
And specifically, this is like would tie him to the heir of Slytherin. I think it's interesting that people like know that he hates the muggles that he lives with, like that would look bad on paper.
Mm-hmm.
He does have he just had like the interaction with Filch right before Mrs. Norris's attack.
Yeah.
And Colin Cravey's been following him around like a bad shadow the whole year.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, okay. So like you could sort of be like, okay, he was starting to bother him too much. He was taking pictures of him while he's in like in the mud. And then Justin Finch-Fletchley is like the one on the receiving end of like this supposed snake attack. And then everybody's just sort of like, yeah, Justin's really worried that something's gonna happen. And
oh, yeah. Like, it's bad.
2 seconds later, Harry is found at the scene of the crime for the third time in a row. It's like, you would be kind of crazy to not think Harry was doing it.
Oh, I mean, you absolutely would. Like, Ernie is kind of like all over the case. I will say, the only thing Ernie is sort of just like skating past is that Harry's best friend is Hermione Granger.
Also true.
You know, who's but she's like a muggle born. So what about that, Ernie?
Yeah.
What about that?
I know. Ernie is so interesting as well, because it's like Ernie kind of ends up being like a rather prominent Hufflepuff, especially as we get into like Order of the Phoenix and stuff. He's the one who famously has the line, like, you know, he's like, us old DA lags.
Us old DA lags.
It's like, okay, Ernie, are you forgetting about all of year two where you totally told everybody I was like the heir of Slytherin?
Yeah.
Remember that?
You remember that?
Ernie. Come on, man. I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
Like
jeez.
That, but yeah. So I mean, I just feel genuinely bad for Harry inside of the situation, because it's sort of like, what is happening, and what are the odds that like he is so entangled inside of the situation and keeps being found at exactly the wrong
position. The fact that Harry stumbles into Nick and Justin in the situation, just like, I'm sure for him, he's just like, why? But no.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So then, I mean, but before he ends up running into that situation, he also runs into Hagrid, who is carrying the dead rooster in one of his massive gloved hands. This is another one of those like little tiny nods where it's sort of like, if you know more about like outer basilisk lore, like, so we just did a video last week sort of like delving into like the history of magic and how basilisks are not a specific creation necessarily of the wizarding world, but more part of like English folklore at large.
Yeah.
And they do consistently have this attribute that they can be killed with the crow of a rooster.
Right.
So if you were somebody who was like invested in it, I'd be curious for like people who live like in England, if something like this would stand out.
Yeah, if you'd be like, oh, dead rooster. I see where this is going.
It's like, oh, the rooster. Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. What's a big snake that can be killed by a rooster? Of course.
Of course it's a basilisk.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that being a little bit more obvious. The other thing Hagrid's like, it's almost surprising Hagrid isn't understanding what's happening here, because he's like so about beasts anyway.
True,
you know, and he's got like, he has his own theories. He's like, it's either foxes or a blood sucking bugbear. And I'm like, what is a blood sucking bugbear? That sounds pretty bad.
I know, yeah. It's like, goodness, is it just like a cousin of a blast ended scroot? It can't be, because Hagrid invents those.
Yeah, right.
That was what I was thinking, though, looking at it. But
it also says, I need the headmaster's permission to put a charm around the hen coop. Like, do you? Did you get permission to engorge the pumpkins? Just do it.
Dumbledore knows.
Dumbledore, he repaired your wand, right? Like,
you guys are cool. You're cool.
Yeah. If anyone asks, he did it. Like,
right.
Oh no, you protected the roosters.
Right. But so anyway, ultimately, you know, everybody, once again, this is the other thing that's kind of unbelievable at each of these attacks, is that it seems like the whole school just sort of shows up every single time.
Yeah. I know.
It just can't get away. Like, well, I mean, I guess Colin's attack happens in the middle of the night.
With the grapes.
with the grapes. Yeah. But the whole school knows about it by the next day. But Mrs. Norris, like, everybody's like exiting the Great Hall and they're all like, wow, okay, we got to witness this. And like, once again, this is like everybody just like kind of funnels into the hallway and they're like, oh man, and is Harry here? He is. How wow. about that? And it's the kid that the snake was attacking. What are the odds of that? They seem slim.
I know. And then in the meantime, it's all coming. This is the chapter where like it's all really coming together in a certain way for Harry, because like he's also like, but if I was, you know, if I was in Slytherin, it would have put me in Slytherin. And it's like, but it wanted to put me in Slytherin. It's like he has that like terrible like voice in the back of his head, like, you were probably supposed to be in Slytherin though.
I know. Yeah. This whole book, I mean, Harry really is having some like some serious like inner struggles that are relatable in their own ways though.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I feel like I like going through like my middle school and high school years, I absolutely was having like a lot of those instances where it's just sort of like your worst thought and you're like, is that just true? Is it just true? Does nobody like me?
Yeah. Okay, so back to Basilisk with secret heat vision powers that doesn't ever get brought up here. So we discover Nearly Headless Nick was no longer pearly white and transparent, but black and smoky, floating immobile and horizontal. So I'm like, this is my thought, is that Nick obviously can't die. He gets the full blast or whatever. But why does he turn black? Why does he turn black, Ben? Because he's burned. He's burned by the heat vision. That's why he's all smoky looking now.
I know, it really is kind of strange that this seems to be like such a common attribute. Like the melted camera from Colin Creevy, the scorch marks during the Mrs. Norris attack. And maybe the scorch marks, it's kind of like because it was like reflecting off the water in the floor. So like maybe it was like scorching the ground it was looking at, but then like the water was like receiving some of the
right. Yes, the heat that makes otherwise. Sense. Yeah, it scorches the ground because that's where he sees the cat.
Right.
The cat is up there, so it's not burned.
So is there any part of us that's sort of like, well, what is with the basilisk having like terrible aim? Does it have like deadly but also kind of poor eyesight?
Oh, I know, especially with Mrs. Norris. Like, they just sneak up on her from behind, like, what? And she just looks down and is like, oh no.
Right. I don't know. I mean, because that's the other thing. Like, or maybe Ginny's just doing like a really bad job commanding it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I guess it's possible. But do you think it's not even Ginny? It's like Tom Riddle acting through Ginny.
It's true.
You know? Yeah, why does he have such bad aim?
I don't know. Or like, why like leave the scene of the crime like without, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's like once the person's fallen down. Although if the basilisk just waited like a few more minutes, everybody's going to show up anyway. So just hang out.
Yeah.
You know, have a field day.
How long have they been sitting there, do you think?
Oh, that's another good question as well. I mean, I guess Harry stumbles across him and you think it just happened, but maybe that's not the case.
Yeah.
Could have been.
I guess Ernie says he tells Justin to head back up to the common room. So maybe it's like
just
while he's, he's left the library, he's heading to the common room. Hey, Justin, zap. Not zap, more like what's a sound for hot blast of eyesight?
I don't know. What's a microwave sound like? I bet that's it.
That's it. Yeah. The basilisk <That's> coming.
the basilisk moving with the sound of microwaves.
Harry doesn't. What's interesting, Harry doesn't hear the basilisk this time. There's no like, rip him, kill him, burn him to a crispy crisp. not having much of an inner monologue this time, the basilisk.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of chilling out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think it's funny that McGonagall conjures a large fan out of thin air, which she gives to Ernie with instructions to waft Nearly Headless Nick up the stairs.
What if he just like floats through a wall? Oh no.
I was like, I lost him in the wall.
Yeah.
You did what?
He's a ghost. How are you supposed to get me a fan.
How are we supposed to get him back?
It seems like, how did that not happen?
I have no idea. Yeah. It feels like it is what's supposed to happen because we know they can go through walls.
Yeah.
They are in fact ghosts.
Yeah.
One of their key
How's
attributes.
It causing him to turn?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It is one of those where it's kind of like, how do they ever get Nearly Headless Nick back though?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like you should be able to administer
spray him with the stuff, right?
Just spritz a little tiny spritz.
Just like float through the air he's in.
Yeah, there. Why not? But anyway, then McGonagall is sort of like, this is out of my hands. There's nothing we can really do. We need to go and talk to the headmaster, which is, I mean, it is wild, like, you know, as time goes on, but like Harry and Dumbledore just have such shockingly few one-on-one discussions.
I know.
But we're about to get in there. We, of course, get the lemon drop password.
The lemon drop password. Yep.
And then we get up to the gleaming oak door with the brass knocker in the shape of a griffin.
Ah, the griffin door.
The griffin door. And we've made it to the end of chapter 11 and look ahead to chapter 12, the polyjuice potion.
Oh, yeah. They're about to morph.
They are. about to morph. I'm looking forward to talking about the chapter arc for next week.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Rather glorious.
We finally
indeed.
Get a look at, I guess, what I forget which one Harry turns into.
It's Goyle.
It's Goyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. What Goyle must look like.
Right, right. Yes.
He's a looker.
He's a looker indeed. Mm-hmm. Jay, do we have a review?
Oh, we sure do. Let me go ahead and pull one up right here for you right now. All right. Today's review comes from Emma Sue Ann.
Hey, Emma Sue Ann. Hope you're doing great.
Emma Sue says, hey, brother, I've been a huge fan for many years. I started watching your YouTube videos when I was in middle school and I'm graduating high school in May. Wow. Whoa. Thank you for watching for so long. I was so excited when Through the Gryffindor came out. It is the one of the highlights of my week. Thank you so much for making such great content. I have a question about Tom Riddle that I've always been super curious about. I've always wondered what happened to the two kids in the cave and what Tom Riddle did to those two kids. I was wondering if you had any thoughts or theories about what happened.
Oh, man. Okay, so, I mean, it's an interesting question. I've sort of thought the same thing before. Like, it's kind of remarkable that he was able to... Do you think he's apparating them to the cave?
Like, yeah, how do they get down there? I think he's using some kind of... Like, they're obviously accessing it magically.
They must be, because it seems like you almost have to access it magically.
Yeah, like, I've always thought he was, like, probably just, like, floating them down or something.
Right, right. I mean, and I suppose that's kind of like one of those things where it's, like, the tormenting could be, like, anything from actual, you know, like young Tom Riddle torture, like when the, like, I think, doesn't he like hang a bunny from like the ceiling?
Yeah, that also seems like a certain amount of like floating.
Right.
Must
yes.
have occurred.
Yeah, it does. So, I mean, it is kind of unbelievable that he's harnessing his abilities and performing so much magic. Actually, the floating's kind of interesting because Voldemort's ability to fly unsupported is one of his like key and incredibly remarkable magical attributes. Mm-hmm. So if he as a young boy was learning how to wandlessly
levitate this mountainside,
right? Like, I mean, that could be like the forerunner as to like how he eventually can fly through the air without broomstick.
Yeah, but so because if what happens is he gets in trouble for bringing the kids down there, right, and she tells them about that, but it doesn't sound like the kids are like dead. Like,
no,
they get back up as well.
It seems like the orphanage would have had to have informed Dumbledore if the kids had died.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, that being said, I kind of feel like they end up in that cave anyway.
As in theory.
Oh, because these would be like
crap
people who knew about the cave.
It would be people who knew about the cave.
And like Dumbledore talked to the Wolves Orphanage lady and she told him that two kids were there. So if like Dumbledore is looking for information and like memories about Voldemort, you know, like these are people who could know about the cave.
Is it the case? Correct me if I'm wrong. Do they eventually try to go to Wool's orphanage and like Hermione thinks it might be a good idea and they get there and it's like rubble? And Harry was like, he hated this place anyway. He never would have done something here.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's like one of those where like, I wonder if he hunted down as Muggles anybody who was at the orphanage with him.
Oh, man.
You know, like.
Yeah, I wonder. Like, I wonder if like the lady who worked there or something.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
Seems pretty bad news for her, I bet.
Yeah.
Because that would be like links to his past. Like, he does seem like someone who would try and erase his, like any information about his own past.
Because, I mean, that's kind of like what's wild is that like Tom Riddle to the other kids at the orphanage is a terror.
Yeah. You know,
but then when he gets to school, he's incredibly well-liked. He's the handsome, highly talented, like, you know, award for services to the school. Like, all the teachers sort of like, you know, fast track for Minister for Magic. Like, you know, I mean, there's all this positive accolade attached to him. Like, he changes, he turns his act around a lot. And one of the things is that, like, Dumbledore single-handedly knows some of the, like, the darkness surrounding him. And it's always like, it's always one of those things that like Voldemort can't quite clear up the fact that Dumbledore was the one who saw through him, who saw some of like that, that like early behavior. But the other kids at the orphanage might know and be able to like identify or recognize like, hey, wait a second, I know who you are.
Right.
So they would all be liabilities.
Yeah. And especially if he's hiding one of the Horcruxes there and he doesn't think anyone knows about the cave.
And the cave is full of Inferi, which we know are Muggles who he killed in his. Yeah.
Yeah. I think those kids grew up to be adults who were later murdered by Voldemort is what I think.
I think there's almost no way around that.
I haven't really thought about it before, but I think that's what happened.
This is like one of those things where it's like, kind of similar to Lockhart, you know, it's like, I mean, he's terrible. I mean, you can laugh at him, but he's terrible. Like, I think so often I laugh at Voldemort because I'm like, he's always in his own way. He's always like, every plan he has is always a dumb plan. Like, his pride is constantly the issue. There's so much he could have done to like have defeated Harry without doing all the things he does.
Yeah.
But like, this is one of those moments where you're just like, this is a dark guy.
Oh yeah.
Like this, you could make like a terrible, really, really dark series about like that goes more into what Voldemort's up to and what this is actually looking like for the victims.
Right.
Man. Whew. Good question.
Good question.
Took me to a dark place, yep. But yeah, good question.
Just like it took them to a dark place.
It did indeed. Oh man.
Laughing helps.
Laughing helps. Yes. But the good news is we can all come together and enjoy the series and Harry's triumph and his nobility and Expelliarmus and all the rest.
Exactly. So I think we're going to end it on that note. Thank you for the review. If you want us to answer one of your questions, make sure you leave a review over wherever, on whatever app you listen on.
Yes, absolutely. It helps the show a lot.
Yeah. And don't forget to subscribe on YouTube.
Yeah.
100,000. We're going to make it, guys.
We can totally do
it. It's going to happen someday. But otherwise, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Make sure you join us next week for Chapter 12, The Polyjuice Potion, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.